From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our call, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, screen time may impair your child's ability to go to sleep. We're going to talk about that. Kids and insomnia, too much screen time, what does it mean? And then we're going to talk about how the FDA is finally taking a stand on supplement makers who are touting that they're curing things when, in fact, there is no scientific proof that they're doing this at all. If you take a supplement, you're going to want to know about this FDA.
Yeah, sounds interesting and very important. What's our recipe?
Thai chicken soup. If you like Thai food, you're going to love this recipe. And it's something, of course, that you can make at home.
Yeah, are you saying I can make it? Anyway, let's get to the phones.
It's the royal you, Tom. It is the royal you.
Get to the phones at 1-800-462-7413, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome our first caller, a listener in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have asked a question about brittle hair and brittle nails. I assume they're connected. And how if anything that I can do to strengthen them or to make them appear better.
Well, they're not necessarily connected, but let's talk a little bit about it. So let's talk about the nails first of all. Tell me about your problem. You've got trouble with your fingernails? Most people, rarely do people call about brittle toenails.
They might talk
about thickened toenails, but they don't talk about brittle toenails. So you've got fingernails. Have you had trouble with your fingernails your whole life or more recently?
Well, I remember back in high school, which has been a long time ago. That's when it sort of started. But they break, they flake, they split between the layers. I've tried a lot of different things. Not very many have made a change.
Yeah, my Aunt Myrtle used to take gelatin capsules for nails. Doesn't do anything. Let me ask you a question. You wash dishes, or do you have staff who washes dishes for you?
Well, I don't wash dishes except to clean them to put in the dishwasher.
Okay, do you wear gloves?
No, I don't.
Wear gloves. That's the number one most important thing you can do to your nails. Whenever your nails are going to be in water, where you're washing things, rinsing things, anything else around soap, you've got to wear gloves.
Yeah, but she just picks up the plate and puts it in the dishwasher.
No. You put it under water to sort of clean it a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, how about the pots and pans?
Pots and pans I clean by hand. Generally I have this sort of like wand thing with the brush on the end. But still my hands do get wet.
And they get wet with soap. It is the detergent in soap is the worst thing that you can have for your nails if you have brittle nails. That detergent is basically weakening your nails. So what you've got to do, get yourself some gloves. I recommend large gloves, because then they're easy to get on, get off, put it in the sink, put it next to the sink, rather. Use hot water. Gloves are great, and that's a very important thing to do with nails. Now, that's number one. Number two, do you wear nail polish?
Well, not generally, but I've been wearing it lately because someone gave me this strengthener nail polish.
But that's exactly right, though. Nail polish is actually good. Clear nail polish, or like Tom does, you can wear red nail polish. That's what he wears all the time.
Don't give away all my secrets. That's why I'm on the radio, not on television.
We know somebody. We know somebody, Ken, who has purple nail polish.
That's right. He only polishes one nail.
Only one nail. If anybody does it, some people will say, what's wrong with that nail? But nail polish is good. Nail polish, in England, they call it varnish. Actually, it doesn't strengthen the nail, but what it does is it goes on top of the nail, kind of like a glove, and it can keep the nail from splitting. Any nail polish will work. The issue is putting it on. The acetone that you use to take it off may cause a problem. So, gloves and nail polish. Now, as for hair, that kind of becomes a different issue, you know, and that's an issue with the shampoo you're using, changing the shampoo, whether or not you use conditioner on your hair. And for that, I always defer to those people with expertise, and those are called the barbers and beauticians. So hair, I can't comment on. I can just comment on the nail part of the question, and that really will make a difference. Gloves and clear nail polish or whatever color you want will make a difference in your nails. Don't take anything orally. It doesn't make a difference. Save your money.
Seriously. Okay, because I have been taking gelatin for the past 8 months, and it takes a long time to grow nails and hair out, so I haven't noticed.
Yeah, you won't notice it. My Aunt Myrtle used gelatin for about 45 years, and her nails continue to split. She always said, "My goodness, your mother has such nice nails." And my mother always said, "My goodness, Myrtle is such a nice weight." So that's what they did back and forth. Yeah, forget the gelatin capsule, put on the gloves, and use nail polish.
Okay, no biotin, no vitamin E.
I don't think it does anything. Not at all. Okay. Don't think it does anything, so. We may, by the way, have some listeners who chime in on what they think they can do to strengthen nails. And if so, we'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org, or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call. Take care.
Thank you, Zorba. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413, our number, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, kids and scream time at bedtime.
That's right.
Scream time.
Scream time.
If they're screaming, that's a whole different thing.
That's right. Scream time at bedtime. That is a different topic. Now, I know, Tom, I know that you have a smartphone with you all the time, because that's exactly it. It's funny, because we used to call, when I was in medical school, we had a little book that we took with us. I had a little loose leaf notebook, mm-hmm. where we would write important things down, numbers and formulas, and I called it my peripheral brain. But in fact, the phone is sort of the peripheral brain, and kids cannot mm-hmm. be separated from their phones.
Yeah.
You know,
when I was a little kid and we were worrying about television, your kid watch television right before bed.
No, but this is very similar. This is a very important article, and it's interesting because I reviewed a different study about 2 years ago that looked at the same thing. So these were British research. The Brits are way ahead of us when it comes to research that has to do with kids and things like screens. So mm-hmm. they looked at nearly 7,000 kids aged 12 and older, and they looked at screen time, mobile phones, tablets, e-readers, computers, you know, all the stuff mm-hmm. of life that kids have, and they looked at whether or not they used it before bedtime. Then they filled out what we call a well-validated 10-item questionnaire that looked at worries, stresses, social functioning, quality of life, and sleep. And lo and behold, they looked at whether or not kids who used anything that was electronic before mm-hmm. they went to sleep, whether or not it disturbed their sleep. And guess what?
What?
You're supposed to guess. You're not just supposed to say what.
Okay,
I'll guess it didn't make any
difference at all.
It did make a difference. It turned out that if you read a book, if you read a magazine, even if you read an e-reader, nothing that you really interact mm-hmm. with, before you go to sleep, it helps your sleep, helps you go to sleep. But if you read something on a television screen and you're looking at a screen, or if you're looking at an iPhone, or if you're looking at something that has almost what we call even blue light, nothing that you're just reading that is static, mm-hmm. it actually is associated with a higher incidence of insomnia, difficulty falling asleep, and difficulty staying asleep if it's done within 1 hour of going to sleep. So it's kind of an important thing from a parental point of view.
I get it. When you were a kid, did you have any trouble sleeping?
Well, first of all, we had a television in the living room. And yeah. I remember when we got our second television. I mean, now screens are ubiquitous. They're all over. Did I have trouble going to sleep as a kid? No, not that I remember.
That's actually, kids don't have any trouble sleeping.
Well, no.
Whether they have screens or not.
No. Kids have trouble at 12 years old. They don't want to go to sleep. So they're looking at their screen. They're looking at their TV. Mm. They're keeping track with their friends. And all of a sudden you say, lights out. Well, lights out means the light is out on the top of the bedroom, but it's not out when you're holding your screen. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. But the other part is, It appears that interacting with a screen may disturb your sleep. And when you're young, you need 8, but more likely 9 to 10 hours of sleep to actually allow your brain to grow. It's better for school. It's better for everything that goes on. So I think from a parental point of view, this is a very important study.
Interesting. Remember the Indian on television?
Yes, I do remember. Yeah, it was a screen when there was nothing that, you know, there was something, they were having technical problems, and it was a circle. You had the same thing.
Why was there an Indian?
It was a circle. There was an Indian chief in the middle of the circle with lines and things, and there was a screen. And remember, there was a sound. It was usually like a shrill beep.
I don't remember that.
Oh, there definitely was a sound. I mean, I can't make the sound because I'm like, something like that to let you know that they weren't doing anything. That's what it was. Yes, right. Funny how those memories come back.
Indeed.
Now, here's another question. Why did we sit there looking at the screen?
Because television was kind of new and there wasn't anything else on.
There wasn't anything else to do but stare at the dumb screen with an Indian chief in the center of the dumb screen. It was kind of interesting.
800-462-7413 is our number.
I hope our show is more interesting than the screen that we used to watch on TV.
Well, you can watch the radio if you want to.
Radio, even if there's nothing coming through it.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Superior, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I've been using a couple herbs to help with some inflammation issues that I've been having, and just trying to figure a way to not use ibuprofen so much. And I have arthritis, and I've been experimenting with a herb called fo tea, which I believe that's from Asia, and the other one's called fenugreek. And I've been mixing it with, and I believe that's from Egypt, if I'm not mistaken.
Fenugreek. Fenugreek.
Yeah. And what I've been doing is I've been mixing the combination with cayenne pepper in my favorite juice, which is usually grape juice with pomegranate. And I've been noticing it's wonderful. Yeah. I use about 75,000 HUs of cayenne pepper, about a half a teaspoon. Love it. I know it's hot, but it's delicious, and it's tolerable. But I've been noticing the color on my hair has been turning black. My gray, especially along my arms, are now, this is weird, I'm not complaining for a guy who's 56 years old, and I'm starting to gray. I noticed my hair on my arms are turning black, and then also I'm getting hair growth in my bald spots. Where I've never had hair.
Wait, hair grow in what spots?
Yeah, on top of my head.
On top of your head.
Bald spots.
Oh, bald spots.
Yeah.
And I've never had hair there for many, many years. And all of a sudden, it's starting to come in with color.
Let me tell you something. If you have developed the recipe to grow hair on the top of your head,
he's going
to
make a fortune.
It, and you will be worth more than Bill Gates. Now, that's a lot to say, but let me tell you something. Maybe not as much as Bill Gates, but you certainly will be in the billionaire club. There's no doubt about that. Whatever it's doing, it sounds like it's improving your body. How long have you been taking it?
Well, I've been doing the cayenne pepper now for about 2 months with just the fo tea. And now I've been doing a little bit of other research using onion juice, using a juicer to help eliminate the pulp. But I've been using the onion juice, and I've been mixing a little bit of apple cider vinegar with the mother. And my body has been benefiting as far as the arthritis. I'm not getting any flare-ups where I'm in pain.
So you're really on an anti-inflammatory type diet. Well, not really an anti-inflammatory diet, but using complementary medicine to reduce inflammation and therefore reduce the pain of arthritis. Keep it up if it's working for you.
Yes, and I'll tell you what, if I end up getting a full head of hair...
You send us a photo, and I'll make sure that you get on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Of course, he's not around anymore, so I won't be able to do that.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really excited. I do listen to your show quite often.
Thank you.
I enjoy it. I drive a lot, and you entertain me, and you seem like an awesome person. I would like to get to know you personally someday, but if I do end up with the full head of hair, I have pictures of me being bald.
I got it. We want the photos. We want the photos. That's exactly it. It's very good.
My wife says that she loves me regardless, but I said, hey, anything that benefits, and this stuff actually does
Really the pain of arthritis and discomfort of arthritis. If it makes a difference and you're on an anti-inflammatory regime, keep it up.
The circulation, everything. There's so much more this does, but I know I just wanted to touch on the key topics. But is the nitric oxide that's producing in my body is phenomenal. I'm feeling really good for a guy my age.
Which is excellent.
Wait a minute. You listen to the show often, not all the time?
Well, when I'm driving, there's certain things I have to get out of the vehicle. I run back in, and I turn it back up so I can see if you're still on.
Okay. There you go, Tom. That's exactly it.
We appreciate that.
Call. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a good day now.
You too.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's fire off another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named Mary in Madison, Wisconsin, who has some sharp words for you about something you recently said about her favorite fish. She writes, "Dear Zorba, I disagree with your disparaging comment about smelt. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and catching smelt at the river mouth when they ran was a really fun rite of spring. We would have a big smelt jamboree. They are quick, clean fry and delish. We'd share them by the bucket with others because we caught so many."
Have you ever had smelt?
No.
Oh, well, let me tell you something. You're in for a treat. And that's why you never see smelt on the menu in any restaurant except in the Upper Peninsula. And let me say something else. The Upper Peninsula is not known for its, shall we say, cuisine. It was very clear that they finally had something fresh in the Upper Peninsula, and it was smelt.
Did something Zorba say not pass the smelt test? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our tasty recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, make us up some Thai chicken soup.
Do you like Thai food?
I'm not sure whether I do or not, but I looked over this recipe.
Wait a minute. You're not sure whether, in other words, you don't go to Thai restaurants.
Yeah, I don't tend to, yeah.
Okay. But you looked at the recipe and...
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, so that is great. Yeah. I love Thai food. Mm. I mean, I like Chinese food. I like Malaysian food. We don't get a lot of Malaysian food. Mm. Indonesian food. I love Thai food. That's just the cuisine. It's kind of my go-to cuisine when I have it. This is a wonderful, easy recipe when you pull everything together. Yes, it has a number of ingredients, but you get it together, making it is like a breeze. And I still remember one of my favorite cookbooks, my friend Nancy, who passed away a couple of years ago now, was a cookbook editor, and she gave me a cookbook called Rumens 20, and each chapter had a different topic. And the first chapter was think. First chapter was think.
Okay.
So with this particular recipe, when you get everything set up, the first thing you do is look at the ingredients and prepare them. Think.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? So let's do the ingredients.
Okay.
Start out with chopping a medium onion. Put that in a bowl. Everything goes in a bowl. Okay.
A medium onion chopped.
That's right. Tablespoonful of ginger, grated ginger.
One big tea, grated fresh ginger.
Now, it can be fresh ginger, or what I do with ginger, it's a ginger root, is I put it in the freezer, and then I grate it from the freezer. It works just as well, and it stays in the freezer for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
3 cloves of garlic. If you love garlic, you can use more than 3 cloves, at least 3 cloves of garlic. You are smiling. Whenever I say garlic, did you know you smile?
No.
You smile when I say garlic. Guess what you look like when I say tofu?
I don't usually laugh.
Okay. At least three cloves of garlic.
Okay.
A couple of 14-ounce cans of reduced sodium chicken broth. Always use the reduced, if you will. And frankly, one of the reasons you want to use that is the reduced broth has more chicken flavor. Mm.
2 14-ounce cans reduced sodium chicken broth.
That's right. And all the chicken, they're all 14-ounce cans, by the way. I wonder why they don't do 16 ounces. But anyway, 14 ounces.
All right.
14-ounce can of coconut milk. You can use the, they're all, by the way, you want to make sure it's unsweetened. But if you can find the light, it has fewer calories, but at least a can of coconut milk.
A 14-ounce can, unsweetened, light coconut milk.
A tablespoonful of lime juice must be fresh.
1 big tea, lime juice.
Okay, now, here you have to go to the store. 2 teaspoons of Thai seasoning, and Thai seasoning has a whole bunch of things in it. It's sort of an easy go-to seasoning mix. Go to your local Asian grocery store, ask for Thai seasoning, 2 teaspoons.
Mm-hmm. 2 a little tea Thai seasoning.
2 medium carrots thinly sliced.
2 medium carrots thinly sliced.
A finely chopped seeded jalapeno pepper. Now, jalapeno peppers, where's the heat? In the seeds and in the core. So when you take the seeds out, chop them, wash your hands after you chop them, because if you rub your eyes like I have in the past, you will begin to tear.
Okay, a finely chopped and seeded fresh jalapeno pepper.
If you don't like heat, do not use the seeds. Okay, 1.5 cups of shredded cooked chicken breast or turkey breast. I use chicken breast all the time.
Cup and a half of shredded cooked chicken breast or turkey breast.
A cup of mushrooms, doesn't matter which kind, the regular mushrooms, straw mushrooms, shiitakes, but a nice cup of mushrooms.
A cup of mushrooms.
2/3 of a cup of snow peas. You can get them fresh, they're better, but you can also get them frozen if you need to.
2/3 cup snow peas.
And a tablespoonful of chopped fresh basil.
Big tea, chopped fresh basil.
So lots of ingredients. Making it is really easy peasy, but lots of ingredients. Okay, lightly coat a Dutch oven, you know, a nice big Dutch oven pan with cooking spray. Heat it over medium heat. Add the onion, garlic, ginger to the Dutch oven. Cook for about 2 to 3 minutes. If you don't have any cooking spray, use a little olive oil. Stir in then the chicken broth, coconut milk, lime juice, Thai seasoning, bring it to a boil, reduce the heat so it's on simmer, add the carrots, the jalapeno pepper, cover and simmer for 5 minutes. Then, when that's done, add the chicken, the mushrooms, the snow peas, the basil, another 3 minutes, you are done.
Yeah, it sounds delicious. I'm trying to picture, does this, when you finish up, does it come in bowls?
You put in a nice bowl. If you've got some parsley, you put some parsley on top. If you've got some bread, you put some bread over to the side. Let me tell you something. This is a delicious, easy, wonderful soup. If you make this for your family, they will love it, and they'll say, my goodness, what kind of soup is that? It tastes delicious. If you want a copy of today's recipe, you cannot send us a self-addressed Santa envelope because we don't have anyone to answer it, but on the computer, you go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org, and you can get this recipe. You can see pictures of Tom and for me. And don't forget, you can always find us on Facebook.
Those pictures are a real treat.
Yeah, they are. You bet.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, how can we help?
I was wanted to talk to you briefly about BMI, the body mass index, and I'm kind of going through a post-cancer colon cancer, and I was going to the doctor every 3 months and every 4 months, and now I'm down every 6 months, and he always checks my BMI and compares it to whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I asked the nurse who took that. I said, "How do you get that number? Because my number always came out to about 25, 26."
Uh-huh.
She said, "Well, you got to take the square root of this times the square root of that, and then you divide it by the time and the age you were when you kissed your first girlfriend and whatever." And so it was a very convoluted formula, so I just made up my own here, and it comes out about the same. So if you just divide your weight by your height in inches, it comes out, and in mine it comes out to 2.547, which is about what it was when they said it, but it's a lot simpler. So
The BMI is a formula. So if you go to the web, you look at the formula, that's the BMI. And it's really height and weight. And the whole idea is that if we look at BMI, it's a simple measure. Because if you look at somebody's weight, well, if they're 5'4", 5'8", 6 feet, 7 feet, you know, with the weight, it's going to look completely different. Thomas laughing. When I got to 7 feet, he started to laugh. But I did. I saw somebody 7 feet the other day. And I'm sure that guy, you know, he was a hefty guy and he was very tall. He was in the airport. Getting back to it, it's a formula that we use because between 25 and 29, we call that, you know, overweight, over 29. At 30, we give numbers. We say it's obese. But frankly, it's just a thumbnail sketch. And I'll tell you why. I have some people who come out of my office, guys, who are very muscular, and the BMI shows that they're obese, and they are not obese at all. They're just muscular. And
right.
And so the BMI is one of the guidelines to really look at in terms of height and weight. So, you know, in the electronic medical record, if you've got your height and your weight, it just puts it in the formula right away. Why not talk a bit about the cancer? So how many years ago did you have colon cancer?
Now it's about 3.5 years.
About 3.5 years. So you go in, as you said, now every 6 months. What's with the BMI? Was your doctor concerned you were losing weight and your BMI was going down?
It was just part of the overall health exam. Like they would do a blood test and whatever, and I would get on a scale and do all that. And I think they were just a general physical, as it were. That and covered everything. It covered. I had a port in my chest for a while, and they were doing a blood draw, and then they'd make sure I had all the important components in there that were in my best interest. And part of it was just, I think, just standard. Part of that exam was to check your height and weight. So
mine
was always decent, but
Did you have chemo with your colon cancer?
Oh yes, I had chemo for a year. That was the worst part because it really affected my joints and things.
Right.
And
right.
I still have some lack of feeling in my hands that I didn't have before.
Right.
And the strength has been diminished.
Right.
So
that's
when I grab a jar of pickles out of the refrigerator, I grab it like I'm trying to crush it because I don't want it to drop.
But that's exactly it. What you say about that is really a common side effect is chemo, is peripheral neuropathy. So you don't have the same feelings. You don't know exactly how to hold things, and then you often have some weakness. But you're 3.5 years out. Congratulations. You know, keep doing what you're doing.
Yep.
Exercise, eating right, Mediterranean diet. All those things are really, really going to make a difference with quality of life. And, you know, you're a survivor. That's a really benefit.
I appreciate that. I do that. I tell everybody I know, and I'll get a colonoscopy because I didn't want to go. My wife nagged me into it. She said, "Let's just go get one together." Okay, fine. So we got one. She got to go home, and I got to stay in the hospital for a day for about 3 days after that until I did the surgery.
So you bring up, there's a very important point here with your story, and that is how social relationships and people who have strong social relationships live longer. So here it is. You had no interest in doing it, kind of maybe thought about it, and your wife said, "Let's have a colonoscopy together." She didn't say, "Let's have a massage together in Hawaii."
Right.
She said, "Let's have a colonoscopy at the same time." And that actually saved your life.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, because I was going to get a T-shirt, you know, and wear it to when I go out and says, get a colonoscopy and save my life or something, you know.
It's a great idea. No. When you talk to other people and you mention it, you may actually save someone's life because they decide maybe I should get a colonoscopy. And that
really,
actually is a really important point.
I even thought of getting little pins to ask me about my colonoscopy or something. You
that
know,
that
would be a little,
great.
That would be a little too hokey,
you know,
even for me.
But
so.
I'll tell you something. I love that idea of what we should do after we do colonoscopies is we should give out pins, ask me about colonoscopies, for people to actually do that, because then we're spreading the word and making it more and more between colonoscopy, Cologuard, the fecal occult blood test, all those things to pick up colon cancer could really make a difference. The more screening we do, the better off we are. So congratulations.
Yeah, it takes 50,000 people a year it kills. So.
Yeah, no, it kills way too many people. So thank you very much. Thanks for sharing your story, too. And keep up your BMI. It sounds like it's perfect.
I love that BMI.
Thanks a lot.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite nitpickers and backseat drivers, the Grammar Police.
You know, I still always picture Miss Schutte, you know, that teacher who is long gone when they say the Grammar Police. I picture her with these glasses, and she was kind of stick figure. I mean, she's this really thin person, and she had that stare, you know, that teachers had in the 50s, like, and always had a ruler in her hand. They always had a ruler. So, please, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, Zorba, this correspondence came to us from a very specialized unit deeply embedded within the Grammar Police. They wear bright yellow uniforms, and they call themselves the Mustard Police. A mustard police officer named Dave in the mustard stronghold of Merrimack, Wisconsin, sent us the following email. Zorba, I love your show, but you missed the mark on the mustard treatment for leg cramps. You don't rub it on your body. You eat it.
Right, sorry.
I have a neighbor who's a high school lacrosse coach, and he says their first aid kit contains a bag of mustard packets. When a player gets a cramp, they give him one or two packets of mustard orally, and it resolves the problem. I've tried it when I had cramps with equally successful results. Remember, eat it. Don't rub it on.
That's right. They bring up an important point. The other thing is that people have mentioned, it's got to be in the packets. They can't just take a teaspoon of mustard from the jar or simply turn the mustard container over and squirt it in their mouth. There's something about the packets. Like, are they manufactured differently or made differently? But let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. If this works to get rid of your cramps, use it.
Do you think Zorba needs to catch up with his mustard knowledge? Or maybe he misspoke and you just want to rub it in. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another topic to talk about, and we'll be quacking up with Dr. Zorba all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our number. But Zorba, before our next call, some supplement makers are touting cures for Alzheimer's
and
other diseases.
Well, you know, you hear it. I mean, you may see advertisements of, you know, take this, you'll be better. If you listen to commercial radio, which I occasionally do, I listen to WGN in Chicago and WBBM, and supplements are a $40 billion a year industry. They're huge. And Orrin Hatch proffered a bill many years ago, basically taking away the FDA's ability to regulate supplements in, I think, a very rational way. I mean, sort of saying, well, you don't have to prove it like a drug, which I think is Okay. But he also took away that bill, actually took away a lot of their ability to regulate things, or basically sort of made it so they couldn't do things. And the head of the FDA now, the Scott Gottlieb, the agency's commissioner, has said, hey, we have to actually begin a crackdown on supplement makers who are saying they can do things. So their companies, one is called Tech Naturaceuticals Sovereign Laboratories, and they are actually, they have a cease and desist order because they're saying that their supplement is clinically shown to help diseases of the brain, such as Alzheimer's and dementia. And the reality is we don't have any cure for Alzheimer's and dementia, and people take supplements and go, hey, it's going to keep my brain, you know, free of this disease,
well,
and in fact, it isn't.
This seems like kind of a no-brainer. They shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, it's a no-brainer in one way, but the fact is supplements are not regulated. So the other reality is this. A supplement can say it has 100 milligrams of a substance, but it doesn't have to prove it has 100 milligrams of that substance. So part of the issue is supplements can claim things and not even have what's in it.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, totally ridiculous. That's why I always tell people to go to consumerlab.com. I like them because they test the supplements and see which supplements have the material.
They shouldn't be allowed to do that.
No, they shouldn't. They should not be allowed to do that. And the FDA and the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, because it goes between interstate commerce, should crack down and say, hey, you have 100 milligrams of this. You've got to actually prove that you have 100 milligrams. And the answer is no, they don't. They can have other things. The other issue with supplements is there were a number of supplements that actually had drugs in them that they shouldn't have in them. The biggest thing was red yeast rice, which actually had a cholesterol-lowering substance in it called Mevacor, made by Merck, supposedly red yeast was actually reducing their cholesterol, and it wasn't. But I think this new FDA commissioner is making a major step. He actually said, we're going to start to crack down. You cannot say it cures disease unless you actually prove it doesn't.
Well, there ought to be a law.
There ought to be a law. That's exactly right. Well, if you think Congress is actually going to take this up, you have another, you know, something. You have your head in the air. They don't actually take things like this up. And so it's this FDA's commissioner's job to actually take this seriously. And if a supplement makes a claim, it has to prove it.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Newport, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, there's a lot of people all over the world, different continents, that aren't hooked up to utilities power, and they get their own batteries and make a system to which they run things around the house, lights and TVs and so forth. I have asked people where they sell these batteries. Now, we're talking about batteries that have sulfuric acid and lead.
Right, right. Lead batteries that actually store solar power. They're lead acid batteries, right? Old technology, about 150 years old, and still is the technology we often use for electron storage.
Well, I've asked the people that sell them in different stores if there's something pernicious or, you know, bad fumes that come out of these things that can bother you. And they say, well, if you charge them outdoors with the caps off and then put the caps back on and bring them indoors, there's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're around the batteries all the time, hundreds of them in the store, and nobody's seems to...
I don't trust, by the way, we're around it and it hasn't bothered us, because I don't actually think that's a really good way of measuring things when it comes to lead. And also, the thing about lead is a growing brain of a kid, of a child, that's the real issue. First of all, there are a couple of things to do. I think if they're charged, first of all, I don't know a lot about batteries, but I do know if they're charged outside, like you say, if the caps are off, I don't know how much lead actually goes in the air. But lead batteries that are capped should be safe. They should be safe. The word is should.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very easy to actually get a lead level, a blood lead level, in a doctor's office. So if you're around lead batteries, you know, and you're using solar storage and you wonder whether or not you're getting lead because there are lead fumes in the air, let's not forget the gasoline, leaded gasoline we got rid of because lead in fumes you inhale and then you get lead poisoning. That's why we got rid of it at all. But the easy thing to do is go to your doctor and say, I want a lead test, and you'll see if you've got it, whether or not you're actually getting lead in your blood. I mean, it's an easy test to actually see. I don't have information, you know, right in front of me. I don't have a computer when I answer questions. I just answer them based on my knowledge base. But I would go and look at OSHA you know, I look at the OSHA website to see what they recommend with lead batteries. The problem is, what do you do with the lead battery when it's done? It's got to be disposed of properly, because they do over time, they don't work as well, and we don't want lead in the bloodstream, you know, or in the refuse stream. So you've got to make sure you talk to local people, find out from somebody around your area that knows about refuse, or what you actually do with the lead battery when it's done. Because it's got to be disposed of properly. But I don't buy the fact that they're around lead batteries and it doesn't bother them. The only way to know that would be to do a blood lead level, and then they can tell whether or not it does bother them.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
We don't actually smell anything.
But you can't smell lead. You can't smell mercury. You can't smell lead. But mm-hmm. Are you using lead batteries to store electrons, solar storage, electricity storage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a blood lead level. That'll answer the question.
All right.
Okay. And you know something? It's good. I think there's going to be more and more storage of electricity as time goes on. We just need to have new batteries that don't use lead. That's the real issue.
Thanks so much for that call. Zorba, you did this really well. Could you say blood lead level 10 times?
It's hard because the L's kind of go together, don't they?
800-462-7413 is our number. And okay, Zorba, time again now to trudge through the murky and, in this case, slimy waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, many of us have heard about the practice of doctors using leeches as a form of bloodletting to treat various maladies. First, tell us a bit about that.
Well, first of all, leeches have for many, many years been used. When a leech actually connects to you, have you ever been bit by a leech?
No.
Neither have I. They're kind of disgusting when you think about it. But what they do is they actually have a substance in their saliva, which is an anticoagulant. So what they do is they bite. They put this little anticoagulant in the saliva. And then tissue then constricts as the leech actually removes blood from you. And mm-hmm. in this case, and in many cases, it's actually been used in areas of the body to remove unwanted substances. You know, clean wounds. They would put leeches on to clean wounds, just mm-hmm. like they would often put other things on to clean wounds. But leeches on to clean wounds, fingers, ears, nose tips. And back in the Civil War days, and back in probably the early 1900s, this was not an uncommon thing to actually use.
But today, doctors are still using leeches in medical practice?
Well, I have to tell you something. You know, we're in Madison, Wisconsin. We're in the forefront of medicine in Madison, Wisconsin. We do lots of amazing invasive things in this particular town, and I have yet to see anyone use a leech to actually clean a wound or use anything at all. But I think certainly in some areas of the world, which are basically are under-resourced, leeches are probably still used on dirty wounds and may be continued and may be used just like they used to use maggots in World War II. And by the way, I had two nurses in my office, one who's still alive, who's in her late 90s, who remembers using maggots in World War II. And leeches, maggots, can both be very useful. And it's natural.
Yeah. Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. Now, we welcome a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello. Great to talk with both of you.
Yeah, how can we help?
Well, first I just wanted to mention I'm living in Knoxville for the time being, but I grew up in Wisconsin.
Ooh, way to go. Way to go.
Yeah.
A badger.
And I have very fond memories of America's Dairyland. Anyway, I listened with great interest to the earlier part of your show when you were commenting on unproven nutritional supplements. Because I have a friend in her late 80s who has severe Alzheimer's disease, and her husband has been treating her with massive doses of vitamins mm-hmm. for what he calls memory support. Mm-hmm. And I became curious about a treatment for Alzheimer's disease that is supposedly valid and hasn't been covered in a big way by the major news media, you know, like you'd expect if there was a really good treatment for Alzheimer's disease, it would be on the front page of the New York Times and on every major news show, and I hadn't heard anything like that. So I did some digging, and it turns out that in this case involving my friend, the source of the vitamin therapy is a doctor who has affiliations in North Carolina, where mm-hmm. my friend was taken by her husband to be worked up.
Uh-huh.
Well, I decided to look up some more information about this doctor, and he's the author of a book
of
that readers can present and reverse cognitive decline.
Right. How wonderful. Wouldn't that be great? How wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be great. Yeah, I've got a book. I've got the answer. I've got the cure. Yeah. I wonder how much it costs per month for his cure, you know? Yeah.
Well, it gets worse.
Oh.
Okay. He recommends something that he calls a cognoscopy.
Ooh.
That's word. Yeah. He made that word up.
Cognoscopy. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's great. I like cognoscopy. Great.
Yeah. And he says that we should all start at age 45 having this test to determine our risk for developing Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, okay. Sounds great.
And then it gets even worse, if that's possible.
Go ahead. Yeah.
He offers what he calls, and I'm not making this up, you can Google it, a brain tune-up.
A brain tune-up. Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
A brain tune-up. Okay.
I need one of those.
I wonder how much that costs. That's right. I'll take a brain tune-up.
Well,
yeah.
Do you want a hazard guess as to what it costs?
No, I'm going to let you tell us. Go ahead.
A lot more than a car tune-up, I'll tell you.
A lot more than a car tune-up. That's right. That's
it
exactly.
It costs $10,000.
$10,000 for a brain tune-up. $10,000. Wow. In his pocket. How wonderful is that? Yeah, and he's written a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've written a book.
And by the way, don't worry if you don't have the $10,000 because he offers financing.
Financing.
Yes.
He offers, you know, snake oil salesmen have never gone away. And with the advent of the web, they have been able to, they no longer have to go like with a cart, you know, into a small town, ring a bell and sell something. They can do that for $10,000. You can, and your friend, you know, unfortunately, you know, for his loved one is giving massive doses of whatever it is, spending a ton of money with no proof at all. And there is no cure for Alzheimer's. We know that. We know at this moment, we do not have a cure. Oh, it's terrible. How awful, 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 awful.
Well, it makes me sad because he's trying to do something to help his wife. And in so doing, he's being taken advantage of.
Right. That's exactly
right.
You know? Right.
And which, to my mind, is unconscionable.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's 100% quackery. It's not 95, it's not 98, it's 100% quackery. We have nothing actually that works for Alzheimer's disease at this moment. We know that there are risk factors associated with Alzheimer's disease, you know, such as loss of hearing that is unamplified. Nobody talks about that. Increases your risk for Alzheimer's, you know, lack of social interaction, but a bunch of things. But there's nothing. The answer is he's a 100% quack. And the best advice you could give your friend is you can say you called this radio show and you said it's 100% quackery, and it's very unfortunate that your wife has Alzheimer's, but the reality is your wife has Alzheimer's and somebody else has their hand in your pocket taking money out of your wallet.
Well, the problem is my friend's husband will not listen to any kind of talk like that, not even to a little hint that maybe what he's doing isn't helping.
Yeah, well, that's how people get taken care of and end up in the poorhouse.
Really
and
bad.
What can you do? What can you do?
I have long admired your willingness to call a spade, to criticize doctors who are in the wrong, and in this case, to call a quack a quack.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the compliment. Appreciate it.
And we
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, hang on a second. Let me pull out my smartphone and check the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. It's time to fire up the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Now, Zorba, do you or anybody else think I pulled out a smartphone?
That's exactly what I'm thinking about. Pull out the smartphone with Faithful Feedback. You know, we're talking about quackery and truth and talking. That's right. Yeah, right on, baby. Pull out that smartphone. I don't even know if you have a flip phone. It's pull out the regular landline phone.
I have a landline.
And dial. And let's do the rotary dial and call.
Anyway, here's a post from a Wisconsin listener named Stephen. He wrote, "Hi, Dr. Z. On a recent show, you were talking about children choking on food. In my wife's country, Nepal, the mothers and grandmothers will chew the food so it will be safely edible by babies and then give it to them from mouth to mouth. It's a very pleasurable and loving interaction of mothers with their children. I always presumed everyone did it. Your thoughts on this?"
Oh, you assumed everyone did it.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of interesting. You know, pre-chewed food. First of all, I find it, you know, because it's not my culture.
Yeah.
So I find it, I'm a little disgusted by it, but that's a cultural issue.
It sounds kind of interesting to
it
me.
Is, yeah, it's a cultural issue. So getting over that, you know, with a baby, you have your saliva in there. You've got your germs that you may have. Mm-hmm. On the other end, there's a mother relationship with the child. You're kissing your child all the time. You're next to your child. Mm-hmm. So I would assume that it may be something that's worthwhile. You're in Nepal, an under-resourced, a country that is poor. I don't know much about that, and I don't know what you may or may not be spreading. So I'm not going to comment on that. You know, I'm going to keep my culturally sensitive brain there correctly and say that I'm not sure what it means and how healthy it is.
Yeah, I'll say so. As a non-doctor, this sounds really kind of interesting to me and kind of a nice way to bond.
Absolutely. Definitely bonding. There's no doubt about it.
Mm. Have a healthy living question for the good doc, like the custodial Mama Robin. Zorba will chew on your question and then lovingly spit out an answer directly into your mouth. Just post on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast,
visit us on the web at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
Yeah, those are my lines. I don't know. You're going to be doing this by yourself. Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.